Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Well, how's that New Year's resolution you made about healthier eating? How's that going for you? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. Larry Mueller here again, and we're going to be talking about that. You may have hit a roadblock on your dieting plans. We have some advice for you. Our two guests from the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison with us, Beth Olson back with us. Beth, an associate professor and extension specialist. Beth, good to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
And also welcoming for the first time, Tara LaRoe. Tara, hi.
Hi, thank you.
Great to have her with us as well. She's a registered dietitian and a faculty associate. So wonderful to have both of them here and certainly ready to answer your questions. What would you like to know about eating better? What may be stopping you from changing your diet? Has being active helped you lose weight? Maybe you can call with some of your experiences as well. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Seems like the perfect time to be talking about this because here we are in National Nutrition Month.
Yes, exactly. The Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics celebrates National Nutrition Month every year in March. And so if you go to eatright.org, there's lots of good information on eating healthy as well as being active.
And is this March, was this month planned because we thought, well, people make their resolutions in January and by March they may be slipping? Is that the reason, or have you no idea? have you no idea, Tara?
I think we don't have an idea, but that would seem pretty logical.
Yep, and spring, you know, and yeah. Summer's coming. We're thinking about getting outside again, so it's a
looking
good time.
Better outside, and it's more fun to be outside after, you know, if you're the like me and you like to run in the mornings outside when it's 10 below or whatever, it's not as much fun.
No, not at all.
It's getting to be a lot more fun now with the weather changing across the state. But here we are in a state that is pretty obese, one of the most obese. I think the CDC said over 40%, isn't it?
Yeah, well, at least nationwide, just over 40% of U.S. adults are now considered obese. And it's been on a slow but steady increase since they've been monitoring that. So that's a reason we want to talk today about steps people can take to be more healthy. We're not focused always just on weight. People can be healthy at lots of different sizes. But
yeah.
We, as nutritionists, we are concerned that people choose healthy diets as best they can, given their likes and their dislikes and their circumstances. And the same with activity, that they be active as much as they can for themselves.
But you do think, you know, here we are. We've become a lot more health conscious, I think, as a nation. Yet the weight and so forth continues to go up. You wonder why.
Yeah, I think awareness doesn't always translate to action. As you said, you know, we still have our cold winters. There's a lot of food available wherever we're out and about at the gas station, and lots of choices in the grocery store, and lots of meetings we go to where people offer food. So there's maybe more opportunities to consume foods high in calories, high in fat, and maybe not as many opportunities to be active until we seek them out.
Well, here's an admission. Just on my way out the door, I noticed one of our graduate students, Claire Holosovsky, had brought in some chocolate chip cookies, and I grabbed one on my way out the door. It's one of those. And how many calories in a chocolate chip cookie? Probably.
Depends on how large it is.
Yeah, it depends. Well, they were kind of smaller, but somebody, and maybe I mentioned this to you, Beth, somebody told me, how far do you have to walk to wear off an M&M, one M&M? Mm-hmm. So if you go to Camp Randall Stadium and you go in to the football field and you go to the far back as you can get and then you walk all the way down to the other end, you have now eliminated the calories in one M&M.
Oh, goodness.
About 120 yards or so. And here we look at these chocolate chip cookies, and with 10 chocolate chips in a cookie, and yet they're there and they are enticing.
Yes, they are.
Well, why do some, you know, I had a lot of people diet. A lot of people go on diet. We've got some good questions, and we'll get to some of them. I know fasting is a big deal, and Gus has something relating to that. And we'll get to Gus in just a minute here. But why do some diets work for some people and not for others? Tara, do you want to?
Sure. You know, everyone responds very differently to diets. And I think overall, the diets that we want immediate results. And so oftentimes we see these immediate results or we don't see these immediate results. And so they're not sustainable. Or there are different types of diets where we kind of jump in with both feet and it's just not sustainable long term. And so it ends up not being successful for a lot of people and then thus discouraging.
So how do you have words of encouragement?
Sure. On one hand, diets can be what we kind of emphasize is certainly if the goal is to lose weight, it's going to be going slowly and sustainably is going to be the best overall health benefit for you. Unfortunately, not everyone is very patient enough to make small changes to make big overall health changes long term.
Somebody said dieting is hard yard by yard, but inch by inch it's a cinch.
Ah, that's a clever saying.
That's a great saying.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, you start on some sort of diet and you sit there and you weigh yourself after a week and you haven't lost a thing. And then 2 weeks later, if you've lost 1 pound.
It can be very discouraging. We do recommend, though, that healthy weight loss is between 0.5 pound to 2 pounds per week. And so even just very small changes per week, just thinking about over time, over weeks, over months, that even 1/4 of a pound, 0.5 pound per week is going to add up over several months.
Well, you know, if you lost 1 pound a week, that's 52 pounds
exactly.
by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. And that's
yes.
pretty significant.
Yes.
It's a lot.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, Gus, let's go to Gus in Fitchburg. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind, Gus?
Oh, thanks, Larry. Thanks to your guest. Yes, I would love to lose 50 pounds in the next year because that's about what I'm overweight on. And I've been on a vegetarian diet for the last year. And I've lost only about 8 pounds, and I really could choose to lose more. And I just watched an infomercial on YouTube. I was trying to watch a video, and this ad came up saying, you know, it's on breakfast, on fasting. And they were talking about, is it good to eat breakfast or not? Is it the best meal of the day? And they were saying yes and no. So it was kind of a confusing ad, but they wanted to sell you this thing about your gut biome and how those could improve that, their product could. But, you know, what's the real story on this? Because it seemed to make some sense what they're talking about. And is this fasting going to help out? What's the long-term sustainable plan I can use?
Well, there was a lot of topics in that question. So maybe I'll talk a little bit about breakfast, and I know that Tara has some experience with the diets about fasting. But I think that overall, people lose weight when they cut calories from their current diet. Of course, we advocate they do that in a healthy way, adding more fruits and vegetables, maybe removing some processed foods or sweets or foods high in fat. But really, to lose weight, wherever you cut the calories, you would then have success. And there are people that find it easier to, for instance, remove some calories from breakfast. I usually don't recommend that. I think most research shows that people who maintain weight loss over a long time do eat breakfast, and that people who eat breakfast make perhaps some better choices about their food than if they skip it and then start snacking later in the morning or snacking in the evening. So usually we recommend over time people look at how could they eat a healthy breakfast. Kind of like when you were talking about if you skip breakfast, but then there's the chocolate chip cookie on the counter on the way in.
That might not be as
good a choice as some other breakfast food.
Well, let's turn to Tara then. Sure. What about this fasting business?
Right. So intermittent fasting, or fasting in general, has been a really popular topic relating to dieting lately. And so first of all, you have to think, what are they defining as fasting? And so there's many different types of fasting you can engage in. There can be time restricted fasting. So that means perhaps you restrict your eating to the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. So you have a 16-hour fast in between. It could be a day-long fast. So there's been versions of a 5-2 fasting plan where you would eat normally 5 days a week, and then 2 days that are not consecutive, you would drop your calories to about 25% of what you typically eat. So roughly around 500 calories. So there's different types of fasting, and so you have to think about that time. The positives of fasting. So scientifically, there's been studies on intermittent fasting. So it does seem to improve. It does result in weight loss for many individuals. So it's a positive there. And it does has shown to bring about positive metabolic changes. So lowering blood glucose levels, for example, blood cholesterol. So, you know, when you're weighing, you know, what is fasting and weighing the pros and cons, the pros are this is a type of diet that is fairly easy for individuals to follow because it's time restricted. You just simply say, I'm only eating between these hours of the day. You don't have to count calories. Whereas some of the cons, it might not be sustainable in the long term for some individuals, especially for individuals with metabolic disorders, maybe type 1 diabetes. That would not be very sustainable for individuals with such conditions, or even athletes, for example. That might not work for them related to their training and calorie needs. But there are some positives around fasting. And again, diet quality and making sure you're eating, you know, good foods within that time. In the end, like Beth said, most of these results of weight loss, it's because their calories were restricted in some way.
Yeah, I just throw in, we always, when people talk about wanting to change their diet, tell them, you know, make sure to check in with your doctor. People have medications that they take or they have certain health conditions. We just want to make sure that their healthcare provider, whoever that is, knows that they are going to make a dietary change in case it would have any impact on their health.
And Gus, guess what? You didn't gain weight this last year, and you lost 8 pounds, so good for you.
That's wonderful.
I'd say
that is successful.
That's successful.
It is.
That is successful, so keep that up, and I hope you take into account some of what Tara and Beth had to say. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. Hey, we're in National Nutrition Month, and we're talking with Beth Olson and Tara LaRoe from the UW Department of Nutritional Sciences about eating and diets and why a lot of them don't work, why different types of eating programs can work. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Craig in Menominee next. Hi, Craig. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me. And actually, that last question is kind of a perfect segue into mine. So my wife and I aren't very good at consistent eating. These last couple of years really only got in. We're pretty good at eating one meal a day. We unfortunately don't really eat breakfast, and both of us consistently forget to bring lunches with us. Just curious kind of health detriments that might have. Neither of us are overweight. We're pretty normal when it comes to weight.
Mm-hmm. When do you eat? Then do you eat in the evening? Craig?
Evenings, so, usually after 7.
Oh, late.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say what would work best for you all. It seems to be working for you. In general, we don't tell people to only eat once a day and to eat so late in the day, in part because we actually do need glucose in our blood to think well. So it is important, you know, especially for kids learning in school, but even for adults to be able to think clearly at work and to have eaten something healthy during the day. And then I think in general, it may not be true for Craig, but for many people, if they eat a lot and more of the calories towards the end of the day, those tend not to be as nutritious. Now, again, this may not be true for Craig, but people who eat a lot in the evening, for instance, are often snacking or using not consuming enough fruits and vegetables or enough dietary fiber and whole grains as if they had eaten maybe a couple of meals at least during the day.
So is Craig and his wife, their weight's about right for their, that he says, for their... So does that translate into okay, given his circumstances?
I think if Craig and his wife are feeling good and meeting and are feeling healthy, and I congratulate them for getting in one good meal per day. It sounds like, you know, they try really hard during other parts of the day. And so some suggestions would be just doing a little bit more planning and sticking some portable snacks and other things to kind of keep their metabolism humming throughout the day and see how they feel after that.
Yeah, and I, you know, probably take a good look of what that one meal is that you're having in the evening and what kind of nutritional value is from that.
Another thing that with eating so late in the evening is, as adults, lots of us, we complain we're not getting enough sleep at night. And that's one of the reasons if we're eating late at night, our body is working hard to digest. And so that can interrupt our sleep. So that's another thing to consider about eating late in the evening.
I'll tell you what's good about our breakfast is having a 16-year-old daughter. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and so I make better breakfast probably than I would if I didn't have that 16-year-old daughter, because I want her to get off to a good start on the right foot for her school.
And that's an excellent example of, we call it modeling. So often families that eat healthy together, their children then develop better eating and other health habits.
I've got to get her developed into the habit of making the breakfast
instead
of me doing it every morning. But I try for a little variety during the course of the week. And the fact that she's there, I'm going to go ahead and make something because I know it's good. I keep fresh fruits and vegetables around, and if she's not there, things can go to pot.
Well, you brought up a really good a point, is having a good food environment, keeping things available, healthy things available in your fridge that are just open up your fridge, being able to reach for something, cut up fruits and vegetables, things that are easy that you see in your home.
Yeah, we keep a fruit basket full. And I'll even wash the grapes and take them off the stems and put them in a bowl like you would have a candy dish.
Look at you.
But instead, my kids will pop some grapes instead of, unfortunately, we recently had some jelly beans also in a little candy dish next to that. But usually we try to keep some fruit out, and that really does encourage them to choose that.
Well, you know, and in the summer I keep I have a cherry tomato plant that's right next to the back door. And so you can grab a couple on your way in and out of the house.
Excellent.
It really works well, because Emily will grab some, my daughter, and I always will. So there you go. Thanks a lot for that call. Dennis in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Thank you so much. I have been using canola oil because I think it has a lot less fat, at least that's what it looks like, than olive oil. And recently I've read some studies that seem to contradict each other, or not quite clear, saying that canola oil may be bad for you in certain ways we're not aware of. So I have eaten it because it's low in trans fats and seems to have about only half the calories as olive oil. But I wondered if perhaps there's some health disadvantages.
I think you're wrong, Dennis, on the calorie. Well, maybe I'm wrong. Tara, what's the difference between canola and olive oil?
So both canola oil and olive oil are a fat, and so they carry the same amount of calories per tablespoon.
Okay.
So the calorie amount is going to be very similar. What's different between canola oil and olive oil is going to be the type of fat that's in it. So both of them are still low in saturated fat, but they're going to have different ratios of different unsaturated fats. So mm-hmm. the polyunsaturated fats, and what olive oil is really known for is its monounsaturated fat composition. So it's the composition that's very different between the two.
I always yeah. thought olive oil was good for you.
Well, I think it is, and I think it canola is. Oil is as well. I think one of the things we've moved towards over time is there was a time period where we really were talking a lot about people eating too much fat, and now we talk more about people getting a variety of foods, and that includes your fats. So you might cook mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. some canola oil, but then maybe you use some olive oil in your dressing, mm-hmm. and then you get the benefits of the different types of unsaturated fats that Tara mentioned yep. if you move among the dietary oils and fats that you use.
So use one or the other, use them both.
I think you use them both, just like Beth said. For cooking, use canola oil. For drizzling and on salads, use olive oil.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate the call. Claire in DeForest, and not the Claire who made the chocolate chip cookies, by the way. Hi, Claire.
Hello. I'm just wondering, someone close to me for many, many years, decades, has talked about wanting to lose weight and tends to not ever follow through, also tends to be not truly aware or unwilling to realize the amount of calories the person is taking in a great quantity of calories. I've talked about doing the three-quarter plan where you take three-quarters of what you normally would put on your plate, reducing the amount of alcohol. A lot of calories come in from the alcohol. And I feel like there must be some kind of tough love thing I could do or something, because I'd really like this person to not have so much weight on. And that person seems to feel that way too. And yet there's no progress for years and years and years. And I wonder about that. What the heck can we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll put in a thought and then Tara may have more. I think the evidence for getting somebody to change their behavior is not very good. It really needs to come from the person themselves. They have to want to make changes. And I think that applies to all kinds of behaviors and all kinds of health behaviors. I think when people do express a desire to change behavior, we can be supportive. We can say, what would you like me to help you with, or what would you like me to do? You know, if someone says, I'm trying not to drink as much alcohol, then maybe you don't offer them alcohol when you come to your house. Maybe they'll ask for it, but you offer, you know, a variety of other things for them. So I think there are ways to be supportive, but I don't think there's ways to change someone else's behavior until they're ready to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree 100% that behavior change really comes from that individual themselves. So again, echoing Beth, being supportive in any way, if you're around this person a lot, you can model some of these healthy behaviors.
You know, one thing that came to my mind, Claire, and I don't know if the person lives near you, but why not say, hey, Beth, I'm starting up, I'm going to start walking every morning mm-hmm. and do a mile or two. Do you want to come with me and let's do this together?
That's an excellent idea. We can model not only how we eat, but our physical activity. And I mean, I think a lot of people, I do so much better with physical activity in a class or with a friend or in a group than I do on my own. And some people do fine without help, but I think there are a lot of people that do better with a little encouragement and support.
Well, if you can start out doing that, do that for a while, then there'd be ways to talk about other kind of, oh, here's what I'm having for breakfast or dinner or whatever. Do you want to come over? Or
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great idea.
Absolutely.
Just model it a little bit. Claire, does that help?
A little bit. I've tried a lot of those things.
Oh, you did?
Many of those things. That's why I was looking for something else, like some sort of, maybe that person just needs to have some sort of program. Like at one point, the Weight Watchers worked quite well because the person was tracking the intake, you know, mm-hmm. really carefully daily tracking the intake. I guess I know I can't make that person do it, but it seems like the person needs something regimented.
Huh?
So I guess I appreciate your input. It's just been.
It sounds like a hard cause for you, Claire. I'm still glad you're interested in that person and helping them out in any way you can. Weight Watchers, I've had friends do on Weight Watchers and then lose quite a bit of weight, and then suddenly they're putting the pounds back on.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think there's a difference between losing weight and then maintaining a weight, whether it's maintaining a weight loss or not gaining weight. And so, as Tara mentioned, there are many kinds of diets that suit different people, the way they live or the kind of foods they like to eat to lose weight. But there are people who have tracked people who have lost weight and maintained it for years, sometimes as long as, in one study, 60 years that someone had maintained a significant amount of weight loss. And they've done this across countries, actually. And there are some very common practices, behavior changes that people make in order to maintain that weight loss. One is, as we talked about earlier, they eat breakfast generally. Mm-hmm. They're very active.
Yeah.
They also tend to, in this maintenance phase, move to a lower fat, lower calorie diet, eat lots of fruits and vegetables. And then they also practice maintenance in some way. So they have behaviors they use, like maybe they weigh themselves every week, or maybe they write in a food journal. So it is a more conscious attention to that period of time instead of slipping back towards what they were doing before and regaining the weight.
In terms of things like Weight Watchers, Jeff said he likes a plant. It's a plant-based food delivery service called Purple Carrot, which I hadn't heard of.
So yes, we're seeing more and more of these delivery meal programs coming out, and a lot of them are great because it's encouraging cooking at home, being able to use cooking skills, preparing your own meals, and so they can be very advantageous to us rather than maybe getting your meals outside of the home from restaurants and preparing more in-home meals. It's making it easy for us.
Well, Will emailed that he's been a vegan for 4 years now and often gets a lot of grief about his diet. Anytime he gets a cold, his coworkers blame it on not getting enough animal protein. He says he's never felt healthier and he's learned to enjoy healthy foods. Is there any actual evidence of putting his health at risk with a vegan diet as long as it's balanced?
It sounds as though he's doing the right thing for himself, that plant-based diets certainly, as nutritionists, we encourage moving towards plant-based diets. The average American meets maybe a quarter of their fruit and vegetable intake per day. So certainly there's improvement there. And so moving more towards more fruits and vegetables in the diet is always a positive thing. Now, it seems as though the caller is experiencing all positive things. And so for him to go back to eating meat, maybe that's not a priority for him. Certainly there are some research studies. It really comes down to diet quality in the end. And so you can, eat a vegetarian pattern, but have poor diet quality, or you can have good diet quality and you can still have a good diet eating meat as well.
And Tara, this one may be for you. Beth could probably take it too, but Chris emailed to ask, do you burn the same amount of calories whether you run or walk a mile?
Well, everyone is very different. So the mileage, I don't know how to answer that. Yes and no, maybe. Certainly, if you're walk, it's going to take you.
Longer,
right? Usually if you're out running, if you're running 2 or 3 miles versus walking maybe 1 mile, you're going to be ending up net calories, burning more calories running than walking. But both are very good forms of exercise. And I think going back to following people that have been very successful at weight loss, the main form of exercise is walking, just simply being active and walking as much as possible.
Well, yeah, and there may be, if you got your knees are kind of bad or one knee is bad or whatever, you don't want to run, why not walk?
Exactly. Absolutely. And you can walk, after dinner with a partner. But then there's also things like parking far away in the grocery store parking lot, taking the stairs at work if you can do that. So there are ways, if if you think, well, I don't have time to work out, or I don't like to go to the gym, or I don't want to go outside, there are ways to be active throughout our day.
I've got a friend who's retired, and what he does is he drives to a different neighborhood. He moves around neighborhoods, and then he does his walking in new neighborhoods. He says it's kind of fun to see the homes and the lawns and the gardens and so forth.
Great.
Sure. Excellent. I know when I travel for work, one of the things I try to do is get out and walk in the area just to see something. You see a lot more walking than you do from a car.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Dennis in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning. Good morning. I just had a comment to add. I've been retired for over 10 years now, and of course you have to change your eating habits. And I have my main meal at noon, and that's a full meal with, you know, meat, potatoes, vegetables, and stuff. And then I have a light breakfast, and then I have a light evening meal, which is usually soup. And then my my treat in the evening is a half a cup of popcorn with, you know, no butter, no salt. And that gives me all the fiber I need. And that works, been working pretty good for me for a long time.
Dennis, you sound like you're on the right track.
Absolutely.
doesn't he?
No, I have no suggestions except to say that's a. I think that you know, sometimes historically that's
works
how people
for him.
Ate. Yeah, ate more in the middle of the day because we were very active. I think it's harder when we maybe go to work during the day and are at a, you know, a desk job, and there's the kitchen down at the end of the hall to have as nice of a meal at lunch as we might have. So I think his having the opportunity to have that lovely meal at in the middle of the day is great.
I always have a can of low-sodium V8, an apple, and usually a cutie, maybe some grapes, and sometimes a tuna fish sandwich. That's my lunch.
That sounds good.
Okay, well, good. I'm on the right track then. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. Wayne in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Wayne.
Well, good morning. I'm enjoying your show. I had a question about my girlfriend. We've been together quite a while, and I'm fit. She's not too fit. She enjoys smoking, and she always gives me the excuse of worried about gaining weight when she stops smoking. And for a while, I would plan, I don't call it a diet. I always call it a meal plan. And because I'm into athletics and have been for my whole life, and you just, if you eat right, it usually works out for me. And if I plan ahead and make meals and stuff like that, it works for me. I do the same for her, and she did really well for quite a while, and she had stopped smoking, and she even lost weight, a whole bunch of weight when she stopped smoking. And now I don't know what's changed because I still plan ahead. I still get her like Greek yogurt, plain, nothing, where we add our own fruit, the whole works. You know, I'll cut carrots. I will, you know, make sandwiches out of Ezekiel bread, the whole works. And she like gains weight. I don't know how to encourage her now that she's smoking again.
Oh.
And she's gaining weight again. And I don't even know what my question is. You got any?
Well, one thing I think you can take some solace in and be encouraging to her about on the smoking and not smoking. Mike Fiore, who I've had on my show many times, is I think the average person quits maybe three times or four times even before they actually quit for good. And so even though she started back up again, there's still time she could still quit.
So that's first. As far as a diet perspective, I mean, with the smoking thing, I agree. I think that is the priority over, you know, certainly a healthy diet is important. But the smoking, I think, really outweighs the risk in this situation, is that getting that under control. And she can always deal with the weight gain or weight loss. It sounds like you're very supportive with her and her decision, but it's about the smoking, I think.
Well, there are, you know, there's the smoking cessation clinic. There's some great opportunities there. If you went online to the UW-Madison Smoking Cessation Clinic, there's really a lot of good information to help people and help people who are trying to help other people quit smoking. So I really, if you haven't done that, Wayne, I'd certainly urge you to do that. And because maybe then if she's able to start quitting again, then you can come in with your own. Obviously, you must have done something to help her losing weight with her dieting and so forth, or with her choices of foods. Mm-hmm. Food does taste better when you quit, but you can still, I think, control how much of that food you eat, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like Tara said, the focus should be on not smoking, if at all possible, and then eating a healthy diet. And then over time, if she's concerned with weight, then look at what more would I do later, and maybe perhaps substituting some healthy habits like walking for
get her out walking,
smoking after dinner or something like that. So sometimes habits that we've had for a long time are hard to just stop. Sometimes we need to replace them with something else that's more healthful for us.
Good luck, Wayne. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Mary in Pewaukee, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Well, hi. I wanted to just point out that I just heard something from the guests about low fat, and I kind of cringed because in the last several years, I believe we heard that low fat is not the best, because fat doesn't make us fat. It's the refined and the processed and the other you know, sugary treats and things like that actually put on weight, carbohydrates. So I just wondered if they could mention that, because I know whenever we used to buy low-fat things like peanut butter, they added sugar. So what are their comments on that, please?
All right. Thanks, yeah. Mary.
I think Mary brings up an excellent point. I think years ago when we first started, us in the field talking about lower-fat diets, what we did mean was, you know, perhaps after dinner, instead of having cookies, you might have an apple. But what happened was a lot of products appeared in the marketplace. People heard low fat, and so they purchased products that were lower in fat but indeed had added sugars. And so that in the end, they weren't, for one thing, removing any calories, and they also weren't developing overall healthier diets. They were simply diets in which we'd replaced some of the fat with refined carbohydrates, which we hadn't intended. So I think there's been a lot more attention as nutritionists to communicate that message, that these are the kind of diets that we're looking for to help people be healthy, the dietary patterns, and as Tara has said a couple of times, the diet quality, and not focusing in so much on individual things like fat or a certain nutrient or something like that.
Yeah. All good information. And again, at the beginning of the show, you mentioned a website that I think anybody who called today would find interesting, mm-hmm. and probably anybody listening would find interesting. And what was that again?
Yeah, so the website, it comes from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. It's eatright.org, and it's National Nutrition Month. And the campaign slogan is Eat Right, Bite by Bite.
Eatright.org. Mm-hmm. Thank you, yes. Both. You'll come back and be with us again sometime?
Absolutely. Of course. Thank you.
Love to have you back. Beth Olson and Tara LaRoe are both from the Department of Nutritional Sciences at UW-Madison. It's always fun to talk about diet and eating. I love to eat, and sometimes I eat too much, but I try to keep the exercise in there, too, and that sort of helps and lets me get away sometimes with a beer or two.
And I think that's a good point, that having a healthy diet doesn't mean you can't enjoy certain foods occasionally.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's another something relating to your health that we're going to be taking up next, and that has to do with colon cancer. And Dr. Noel LaConte will be coming next with us to talk about colon cancer awareness. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.